your afternoon home for Kings Talk and so much more. The Drive Guys on Sactown Sports.
This is a great afternoon for Kings Talk with the Drive Guys. We do have Mark Kreidler in for Drapes today, Drapes with the day off. We got Brendan Nunes, our Sactown Sports Kings Insider at 3:30. And then Jerry Reynolds at quarter after four
today. I remember him.
Yeah. Very excited to be on today with you, I think, Krides.
I'm excited to ask him some questions.
Among other things, we'll have to ask him about trades and trade rumors and what was going on with Harrison Barnes last night. Did it have anything to do with trades, showcasing? I don't know, but we do know this. The Lakers' plan, as I said, for world domination has been revealed, Krides, and what do you make of it?
Well, I'd like to hear it first.
Lakers, according to reports, have had internal discussions about sending three draft picks paired with players already on the current roster to land a, quote, bona fide star, end quote. That's according to ESPN's Dave McMenamin. And he goes on to name two specific, quote, bona fide stars, end quote. Trae Young, Donovan Mitchell.
Really?
This is laughable to me. Lakers have been linked to numerous players in recent months. We know that they've been linked to DeJounte Murray. But, yeah, that's what McMenamin says the Lakers' plan is.
DeJounte Murray's a pretty good player.
He's a real good player. Yeah, he had a big night last night.
Yeah.
I know Kyle Draper thinks the Kings should be in on DeJounte Murray, and I was. And I'm really fickle. I'm like, yes, that's a great idea. And next thing, no, I don't want that guy. I'm out on Murray because of the whole thing with he and Fox. I think there's a potentially awkward replication there that I don't know that their games mesh, but he's a really good player. But Trae Young or Donovan Mitchell, I mean, I think sometimes the Lakers think it's like baseball. It's like, get the best guy at that position and that position and that position.
Yeah.
And then you have a good team.
I was about
to say. That doesn't work that way, Kreitz.
Well, it's like when you were talking about, you know, Murray and the Kings, it's about fit. And I think but this would be almost consistent. The Lakers have made so many head scratchers over the last few years, and it could be that they're chasing a LeBron whim.
I agree with that 100%.
Right. I mean, if he starts talking up a guy, you start thinking, how do we get that guy? Because LeBron thinks he would really help.
You don't want him and Bronny to go end up playing for the Clippers or somebody.
Well, that's but thank you for saying Clippers, because I'm chastened by the fact that I completely thought Harden to the Clippers was a huge mistake. And speaking of fit,
I did too. I would never admit it on the radio, but I did too.
No, this is just between us, but in my house by myself.
Yeah.
I thought it was, again, a terrible fit and sort of a culture problem. And it's been none of those things, and
they're
playing
also
great basketball.
Happy. Yeah. And it seems like they're sincere. Oh, I hope we can keep the team together. Did you see Russ's interview over the weekend? He had a great game, and so it's the first interview he's doing with the new sideline reporter.
Okay.
And the guy looks like, and he's, you know, bless him, he's really, really young. And he starts to ask Russ a question. Russ goes, hey, wait a minute, man. You're the new sideline reporter. That's great. You know? And you don't do that unless you're in a real good spot, right?
I'm telling you. Yeah. You've seen some of his stuff at courtside before.
Yeah, I just don't like you.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I hope we keep the team together. And it's real. It's genuine. At least they're feeling that way now.
And Harden is rewriting a huge part of his own story if it continues to go this way. But with the Lakers, I really do think a lot of it is LeBron's whim and sort of what he thinks will work. And, you know, let's just put it this way. Adding Trae Young to a team that struggles on defense anyway is just an idiotic idea. Like, and the idea of giving away draft capital for that is crazy. I mean, with Donovan Mitchell, he's got elements to his game that I could really get behind. But neither one of those guys is going to give you any integrity as you go back down the floor. And I just don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how that improves them in the aggregate.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean,
I would
defer to, you know, Jerry Reynolds on that when he comes on with us. But that's my initial thought is, wait a minute. You're sort of actively getting worse on guarding the basketball.
I had the same thought you did, because I'm trying to figure out why would they. Okay, I mean, I know that
it sounds random
on the surface, but why would they do? Oh, if you got LeBron going, hey, we got to do something. What do you want to do, LeBron? I want to get Trae Young. All right, anybody else you want?
Yeah, and if I were in LeBron's position,
they got to at least make an effort.
Yeah, I mean, he's running out of time. I totally get that. The first part is, hey, we have to do something. It's the second part where they get in trouble, where they basically ask him, well, what do you think? Instead of saying, yeah, we'll work on that. It's sort of, well, what do you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Who would you like to
play? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. it sets him up for a rough go. But again, having been completely wrong on Harden, I won't go 100% that on that, because I really thought that was a bad deal. I thought the Clippers were doing sort of a
Dilson
same
pizza
old
left
Clippers
in the box.
Thing.
You could be right. We'll see how it ends up.
But you're right about them being happy, and it shows on the floor. They're having a good time playing basketball.
Strangest thing.
Yeah. Even Russ.
Yeah.
Things change.
Me and PG and Kawhi and James, I hope we can keep this team together. What?
Well, the funny thing is, in a weird way, it's sort of like what you're saying with the Lakers. Like, well, why don't we just put the best guy at every position? The Clippers kind of did, and it's working, at least for now. It's working. Mm-hmm. Playoff basketball, who knows? But in terms of winning regular season games, building camaraderie, learning how to play together, they've done all that stuff. And nobody knows what will happen in the postseason.
According to reports, the Lakers have been working on getting DeJounte Murray. And the reports that you may have seen, and who knows how accurate these are, some of it's disinformation, but the report was that the Lakers would offer a draft pick, a pick swap, and D'Angelo Russell for DeJounte Murray. And the Hawks are like, we don't even want D'Angelo Russell. Exactly. Maybe if you get somebody else involved to take him, you know, maybe we can start talking about it, but they're a long ways off on that. So now it looks like maybe the Lakers is like, nope, we're going for the big bona fide star. So in the immortal words of C-Webb, good luck.
You know where you know where the Hawks are, but that doesn't mean they're just giving away DeJounte Murray to the first team that says, hey, we'd like him.
Yeah.
Here, we got him. You can have D'Angelo.
Remember how much Cleveland gave up for Donovan Mitchell in the first place? That was a hefty trade package.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You have to be sure you're done with that experiment before you move on.
The market is way out of whack, but it'll correct itself, right? I mean, it just may take a while. I mean, now the going price for a player, a superstar caliber player, given what Danny Ainge was able to do with Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, is three number ones.
Right.
Because he was able to pull that off. So that's kind of where the market is. It's going to have to be reined back in at some point, but it's going to take time. And that's part of the issue for the Kings right now.
Yeah. I think that when the poker gets that pricey, a number of teams will just say they can't play. That's actually where I think the correction starts, is when a number of franchises that ostensibly could be trade partners tell you, you know, based on the market so far, we can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
When that happens, at some point, a franchise will blink and say, well, we don't want all that just because the other guy got it, just because Danny could pull it off.
I mean,
that doesn't mean we have to have it. Then the market will begin to adjust a little bit.
And I think the Spurs, I think they got three number ones for DeJounte Murray in the first place from the Hawks. Mm.
And a pick swap.
Yikes. Wow. Okay. Well, that's...
So now you're the
Kings.
We talk about
the Kings'
progress. We don't
want
to trade all our draft picks. Well, then you aren't going to get anybody.
No, that's right. And we talk about where they were and where they are now. But they're still not at a point where that sort of dealing is within the realm of possibility. It's a bad business.
And, Mark, you made the joke earlier about the Thunder and how they haven't used their draft picks yet. Well, what's going to happen is that either those teams who have accumulated all the draft picks are going to start bidding against each other for star players, or they're going to slowly start trading them for, you know, a star might come available, but they only have to give up two of those first round picks because, well, who else are you going to get to give up two first round picks? We have all the
Oklahoma
valuable
City's
picks.
Oklahoma City's got them all.
That's a great
point. Yeah.
And I'll say I don't know if they still are your team, but you're from Oklahoma.
Of course they're my
team. You're Thunder.
Are you crazy? Yeah.
Look at how good that team is now. And let's say there was someone available that they really wanted now, which is not hard to imagine. And they just felt like, man, that's the guy that puts us over the top. How many draft picks do you want?
Right. You've got the capital.
Seven,
to go
eight.
Do
what? Just,
I mean, yeah. So you
but,
joke.
But let's be clear. I mean, you know, they crawled over broken glass to get here, right? I mean, years of terrible basketball and you know, watching SGA play basically sort of out there by himself. Speaking of, you know, have one guy do it all. It's like, well, we'll give it to Shea this possession. So that went on for a couple of years of rough, rough basketball. And you had
but they came out of it pretty quickly. I agree with you, but
they did. But you had to invest as a fan. You had to invest in you know, I believe Sam Presti knew what he's doing and knows what he's doing, and it'll probably work out. Otherwise, you're looking at a tough slog, and a lot of franchises are not willing to do that.
Well, the Kings were never willing to do that.
Heck no.
The Kings, not. I mean, they've certainly had years where they've been like that, but in recent years, they decided we're not going to do that. We're going to kind of rebuild on the fly.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is you get to a point where you may be now where, well, you're as good as you're going to get unless you go get somebody else.
It's true. The other thing that happens, and this is really on the business side, but it all matters, is if you decide to really rebuild, you turn over your contracts to young players. Your contracts are controllable, and you're not overpaying to keep a valued member of the franchise, but someone who you realize you're probably giving too much money to. And when you try to change out on the fly, you wind up often with contracts that are, for one reason or another, untenable and can't be included in trades. And that's, you know, the other advantage you have. But boy, that's a fine line to walk, and not every fan base would put up with it, honestly.
Do you have trade fever? I admit I have trade fever.
Of course I do.
Yeah. There was. Yeah. I'm sorry. That was a bad question by me. Of course you do.
Yeah. I mean, don't be silly.
For the first few weeks of the trade season, if you will, I was just very, you know, had a very high bar. It's like, I don't want that guy. I don't want that guy. And now at this point, you know, as I said, I'm a little fickle, but at this point, yes, anybody. Who? Okay, fine. Let's go get him.
Yeah, it was the Rozier deal that did it, right? Yeah.
Yes, that's the deal. Right. What today's big NBA trade could mean for the Kings when we come right back here. Mark Kreidler in today, Drive Guy Sackdown Sports.
Live and local, it's the Drive Guys. Watch the show on youtube.com/SacktownSports1140.
Or listen on the Sacktown Sports app.
Those who are watching, we appreciate it greatly. But Kreids,
yes.
Some are saying that you and I could be related. James X just joining in, and I'm seeing double. Manny says, LOL, James. Twin says, Roy. And Manny says, yeah, they do look like brothers or could be related. And all the time we've worked together, have you ever heard that before?
Never. But I think it's possible maybe both cameras are just on you today. Is it possible?
I tried that, and they wouldn't let me do that.
You're keeping them on their toes, because the last time Drapes was out, you brought in your actual brother to the show.
That's right.
Ah.
Bannon was in here.
And there wasn't one comment like that the entire show, correct?
I don't think so.
Nope, there was
I
not.
I don't think
no.
so.
By the way, Colleen said to tell you hi.
Oh, and my wife said to say hi to you and Colleen.
So that's lovely.
Yes, right. Yes. And we're going to say hello to Jerry Reynolds just after 4. And coming up bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to Brendan Nunes, our Kings insider. He'll give us the latest on whatever the heck is going on here with De'Aaron Fox.
It is genuinely curious, man. I think this is the kind of thing that can become a major problem, especially now that it's more widely known that there's something going on. It's got to be addressed like immediately.
Right.
The team has to, the organization has to stand in immediately.
Two things, though. I could see how maybe they wouldn't. I agree with you. It should be. It could be. But one, they're going on the road now. Two, let's face it. I mean, this is not – we don't have the largest, most aggressive media contingent here in Sacramento.
Of course.
And I'm part of it, so I'm not casting aspersions.
Of course. But is he only not speaking to local media? I mean, I'm not clear on exactly what the parameters are. Or is all media off limits? In other words – it could be a problem on the road, yeah. Or at the very least, it could be noted if De'Aaron Fox repeatedly declines to be in or doesn't make himself available.
Pardon me, but I guess it's over. I mean, he did talk to two reporters last night, so technically he's talking to reporters again.
We don't know that. We only know he did last night for a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. Really don't know going forward how he's going to feel. And again, you know, just to be clear, you and I both agree is high probability that we don't know everything that's going on. So you always have to allow for the fact that there's a human element outside of basketball that is weighing heavily. I hope not. No, I don't.
Of course.
I'm just. It's always possible that he's been playing through something physical and resents, you know, any implication that he's, you know, off his game.
Excuses, yeah.
Right. So there could be.
Been a lot of questions. And he hasn't given anyone the chance or many chances to ask him directly, but there have been questions. I know there was a question to Mike Brown that Brendan himself may have asked. It's like, is De'Aaron okay after the Pelicans game? And Mike Brown said he seems fine to me. You might want to ask him. Well, you
can. I would.
Yeah. We can.
Love to. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, I don't remember anything like that happening in a long, long time. Now, kind of just to walk it back to what we were talking earlier about when locker rooms and clubhouses were more open to reporters. You could have a feud between a player and a writer or a player and a broadcaster. And that would be very widely known because it would happen in front of other
people.
Sounds
like you're speaking from experience.
That's not important right now. But what I'm saying is it wouldn't be a secret because it would be impossible to hide something like that. I mean, I've certainly been part of groups where if a certain person walked up to join the group interview, the player would say, I'm not answering any more questions until blank leaves.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you would know there was a problem.
Ooh.
With this, no one really seems to know, and clearly no one's gone to any great length to find out.
I would say this. We don't know what's going on with De'Aaron Fox. It's been, you know, there is a theory that always upset about something that was in the media. I don't know, but to me that is laughable, especially, as I say, the Sacramento media, that a player could be that upset about something. Because there's been nothing that's been derogatory towards De'Aaron Fox, right? Other than maybe, hey, he's not playing well.
Yeah.
If that were what it is, and I can't believe it is, that would be ridiculous and unacceptable. You agree?
Yes, I do agree. And that's why I don't think that's what it is.
Yeah.
There's something going on, but it isn't that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would be too obvious and too easy. And,
yeah.
You know, you would know that immediately, or you'd be able to circle back and say, oh, yeah, I remember that game, and he just got lit into, and he took it personally or whatever. None of that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's genuinely mysterious. And it, more to the point, it may be, we don't know, but it coincides with bad basketball.
Exactly.
I don't want to say it's causing it, but it coincides with it. And so as anyone who's like watching the franchise or is a fan or is interested in the franchise would say, can you please fix that?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a chance we can get that fixed?
Somebody on the chat, before the chat spun off into, you know, the zoo topic, which is wonderful. I love it. But before it did that, you know, someone said, oh, maybe he's heard trade rumors involving him. I mean, maybe, but I don't think so. I
don't think so. I mean, I haven't. I mean, his name would naturally come up in trade conversation, but not seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of.
Someone else might say, hey, how about Fox? And I think at this point, the Kings would be,
pretty happy with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty
maybe,
happy.
Maybe, I was just thinking, I'll think out loud here. Maybe he's upset because there's all this talk about, oh, they would never trade Keegan, but there hasn't been any talk that they won't trade De'Aaron Fox. It's unlikely.
There's no
way. Thought just flashed through my mind, okay?
But there's no way he's that sensitive. There's nothing in his history that says he's that sensitive, right?
Right.
I mean, and for that matter, he's played through stuff too. Like, we already know he's a tough player.
He played through trade rumors a couple years ago.
Right. There's something outside of all that conversation that's going on. And for all I know, it's organizational. I'm not trying to tee off on anybody. I'm just saying it's really
possible.
You come
in one day and you're taking cheap shots.
Sure. Well, you said come in and fire away. No, but it's possible that there's stuff behind the scenes of his daily life in the organization, as part of the organization, that we don't know about, that's causing some sort of a problem. Don't know.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of trades, the Miami Heat acquiring Hornets guard Scary Terry Rozier for Kyle Lowry and a protected 2027 first round pick.
Okay.
So the Heat get a gifted scoring guard, having one of his best seasons. And there's a lot of talk that Kyle Lowry will probably be bought out and he will end up going elsewhere. But that seems like a reasonable price. I mean, in terms of how this affects the Kings, I don't know that it does, but it perhaps, in terms of the price for some of these players, this one seems pretty reasonable.
It does, partly because of what you said about Lowry. If in fact his value to a team is maybe, you know, someone we're going to acquire and then you know, spin off.
Yeah.
Because it then, in other words, the trading team can say, that gives us options. Now we're going to open up some lanes here. That makes a lot of sense. And a one, okay. It's when you start getting to multiple picks.
And it's a protected one.
Yeah,
in 2027. And you know how it is. Some of these GMs in various sports, like, we'll trade you a pick in 6 years. I won't be here, so I don't care.
I'm getting fired next Thursday.
Yeah.
You kidding me?
It doesn't matter to me what happens with that pick.
Well, we're dealing with this year. And the Heat probably looking around saying, if we don't add some scoring, we're going to have a tough time even in the early rounds. right? I mean, that's a very solid organization that needs a little more scoring. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
I'll tell you how this could impact the Kings, this whole deal, or at least the thinking behind the deal. And by the way, the Hornets are going to work to move Lowry onto another team before the deadline. And if they can't find a deal, he could eventually become a buyout candidate because he's on an expiring contract worth $29.6 million. But here's the thing. According to reports here, the Hornets are not done dealing. So they are discussing other deals on their veteran players ahead of the trade deadline. Mm. And I don't have a hard time imagining that the Kings have a list of forwards they would like to acquire, they'd be interested in. Siakam was up there, gone. Mm-hmm. Anunoby, gone. Is Jeremy Grant on there? Probably. PJ Washington may be on that list as well. And if the Kings aren't able to get guys on the list ahead of PJ Washington, they may end up coming back around to Charlotte to see if he would be available.
I know we're just ballparking it, but what's his value? I don't mean his value as a player. I mean, what would be going back
right.
That would make sense?
My first instinct was to say something similar to this, perhaps.
Okay.
I mean, Terry Rozier is, he's a big-time scorer.
Heck yeah.
And I know P.J. Washington came in with a bigger reputation, but as far as his production, I don't think you'd have to give up too much more than that. I wouldn't think.
I wouldn't think so either. I mean, that's more in the realm of reasonable. It's not a huge move, but it's a building block move.
Yeah. Player and a pick for PJ Washington, there'd be some risk involved because he's been kind of inconsistent. And he doesn't always do the things you want from a big forward. But I'll bet he's on the Kings list. Mm. They haven't gotten to him yet.
Our friend Brennan Nunez put together a PJ Washington trade a couple weeks back. And the one that he concocted was Sasha Vezenkov, Davion Mitchell, the 2025 second that we have from Portland, and then a future second from the Kings.
So no ones, just a couple
no
twos.
No ones. It'd be Sasha and Davion and 2 seconds.
No, they can't have Sasha.
What?
No. I'm a big Vezenkov guy.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. He certainly seems to have found his footing.
Just give him, please. Yeah. To let the guy find his footing before you decide what his trade value is. Absolutely.
And when did
not.
That start? When did you
2 months
hop
ago.
On the Vezenkov wagon?
2 months ago. I mean, for a while, he wasn't playing enough for you to really be able to make any judgment. And just watch him play, and I just realized he really understands basketball. He really, really understands basketball. He will get this. He's going to get the flow of this offense.
He sure understands. I'm supposed to stop you from going over there and scoring. I can't, but I understand that I'm supposed
well,
to.
Well, he watches with enthusiasm. You can't have everything, Whitey. But he can, and I think he will, accelerate their offense as time goes by in the time that he's on the floor. I'm not ready. I don't want him packaged up yet.
He really is good. The way he plays off the ball is a perfect fit for him. And it seems to me that in basketball, shooting is kind of like pitching in baseball. It's not quite analogous, but it's similar in that everybody needs it. I don't care who you are, how good you are. You can always use more pitching. You can always use more shooting.
Right.
And it looks like he's finally finding his stroke now, and he could be an elite shooter. And he does that bow and arrow thing. Is that what you like about him?
That's all I took. But, and I know when I talk, and I know you guys talk about the Kings defense a lot. And rightfully so. But I do think he's one of those guys who can he'll generate enough offense by himself and with others to offset his defensive liabilities. You can say that about some guys, but not others. He's one of those guys that I would keep around for that reason.
Yeah, it's not his fault, but he's on such a bad defensive team that they just don't have that much wiggle room at that end, you know?
That's right.
It's he can't cover for you. We're already covering for that guy and for that guy.
That's right, and the minutes he plays are important minutes. But there are also minutes when they're often very weak on defense. So it's not that simple. With all that said, he stays.
He's carving out a role for himself, though, last couple of games.
Find somebody else to dish.
Were the Kings showcasing HB, or was he showcasing himself last night? We hope to find out from our Kings insider, Brendan Nunez. He joins us next. Drive Guys on Sactown Sports.
For the final time in the regular season, the Sacramento Kings and Golden State Warriors collide.
Accelerates front court, gives to Lyles on the run, into the lane, drops to Herter, to McGee.
Crank it up, throw it down, big fella. JaVale McGee with a full windup and a two-hand ripperoo.
Join the G-Man for the call Thursday at 7 as the Kings and Warriors square off from San Francisco on your home of the Kings, Sactown Sports and SactownSports.com.
Thank you.
Drive Guys, live and local, every afternoon, Monday through Friday on Sactown Sports.
Kyle Draper got so excited last night with the Kings winning and the beam and everything. He needed the day off. Actually, his son's playing basketball today, so Kyle's checking that out. So, Mark Kreidler is filling in today, doing a heck of a job, a peach of a job, crackerjack of a job. Thanks.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, great to have you back. Great to be back on the radio with you. We've done a few shows together over the years.
You bet. Honored and humbled to be here, by the way.
Truly?
Truly.
Yeah. Our Kings insider, Brendan Nunez, is going to join us in just a moment. The De'Aaron Fox thing, again, it's somewhat risky to say things without knowing what's going on. I'll just say, I don't think this team is good enough for some of this drama. You know? It's like, wait a minute, what?
If you're Mike Brown, I'm pretty sure that's what you're saying. Is we here's one thing we don't need and should probably, you know, quell as soon as possible. And again, it's always what we don't know is so big that it's, you know, that it's possible that the coaching staff and is very aware of what's been happening, and it's something that they don't, you know, have a lot of control over, or, and heaven knows, you know, hopefully it's nothing serious. And it could just be, if it's just a guy being impetuously angry, that would be a little funky, but not serious.
Yeah. It could be two separate things, right? Obviously, it could be he's upset about something, and he happens to be playing hurt, but one has nothing to do with the other. Maybe that's the case.
Well, yeah, and it's certainly not best case that if he's trying to play through something, but it would explain a lot.
Yeah. Well, here's somebody who knows everything about the Kings. Sactown Sports Kings Insider, the one and only Brendan Nunez. Hello, Brendan. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How about yourself?
We're doing fine, and we're glad to talk to you here because we know you know everything about the Kings. So what the heck's going on with De'Aaron Fox?
Yeah, kind of a weird situation. You know, I think there's more to it than meets the eye. And I'll start by saying I've seen some people and, you know, fans are obviously a bit confused and wondering the same sort of thing. And I don't think this is anything to do with his character or leadership or anything like that. And just speaking on, you know, him not talking to the media for the last like 2 weeks or so, assuming that's what you guys are kind of referencing.
Sure.
And yeah, I mean, I think that it's just kind of a complicated situation that, like I said, there's more to it than meets the eye. And I don't think it speaks to how he is as a person or as a leader or a teammate or anything like that. There's just kind of some potentially complicated behind the scenes stuff that I think is involved there as well. And, you know, I'm sure people will read into that a bit, but do your best not to all too much, I guess, is what I'll add to that as well. And yeah, it's been an interesting situation. I'll just say from my own perspective, only having been credentialed for about like 3 years now, this is kind of my first time really dealing with something like this. And, you know, getting used to just the understanding that it is technically a contractual obligation for him to be speaking with media. And when it comes down to it, you're the face of the franchise and the team was just going through a little bit of a losing streak and the fan base wants to hear from you. So I don't think it's necessarily like media feeling, you know, obligated, like, oh, he has to be speaking with us or something like that. It's us sort of being the vessels to the fan base that does obviously want to hear from their star player. And it's, I guess, confusing from the outside, maybe why he's not. But again, I think there's just kind of more layers to it than maybe what some people realize. And I don't think that necessarily has anything to do with on-court production or how he is as a teammate or a person or anything like that.
Well, that kind of leads to the because I think that's where, Brendan, the rubber meets the road is basketball. And in your observation, is there a basketball toll being paid here at all? I mean, are people to connect what's been happening with his production or with the team's performance?
You know, potentially. I think that there's definitely a possibility there, but it's kind of hard to know. You know, like I think that Mike Brown, when it came to just his on-court production yesterday, put it pretty well that this is still a 26-year-old guy that we're talking about. And he started the year amazingly. And I think that we've seen him grow a lot throughout the last couple seasons, obviously, and really in the 7 years since he's came into the league. And I think kind of the next development is not only taking this step, but learning how to sustain it. You know, he's getting shown so many different defensive looks, even varying more so now that 3-point shot is really going down. And I think there's an adjustment to doing that for, you know, 70 games out of the year, even if players should be you know, allowed obviously some wiggle room for maybe 10, 15, however many people are comfortable with just kind of off nights. But I think that there's potential that it's playing a part, but I tend to gravitate more towards like this could very much be happening without any of that extra stuff going on as well. And he's adjusting to being a not just star, but like borderline superstar, and sustaining that is something that's difficult in a learning process within itself.
Here's a theory, Brendan. Is it possible, and I know you may not know, but is it feasible that he's feeling maybe a little hung out to dry? Like he's not aware of what's going on. Next thing you know, people in the media, like yourself, just doing your job, you're wondering, hey, where's De'Aaron Fox? Where's the leadership? And then he feels like, well, I didn't even know any of that was going on. My team didn't back me up. I should have been aware of that. Is that maybe part of what's going on?
Yeah, I think to an extent for sure. And team is a very loose term and not just.
I mean, like the organization, my organization, his organization.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. For sure. I think that definitely could play a part here. And, you know, this all stemmed from Keon Ellis getting thrown out after two really bad losses. Right. They did it when they got blown out in Boston, and Keon was part of the rotation at that point and played some notable minutes, even if I think it would have been more fair for somebody else to go out and speak. But then after the New Orleans loss, where they're down 40-50, something like that, when he checks into the game for the first time, and then he's the only one that speaks at the podium, it really stems from that being unfair to Keon. And that's not specifically a De'Aaron Fox thing. I think there's about seven guys that play consistently. There's that starting five, there's Malik Monk, and there's Trey Lyles, where I think that they probably, any of them really, would have been better to answer questions out there, not leave Keon sort of high and dry. And then obviously from there, it's kind of continued to the point where obviously Darren's kind of not really communicating that much through media. But I definitely, to answer your question and kind of full circle there, is I do think that there is potentially that's playing a factor a bit.
Gotcha.
For lack of a better way to ask it, how should the Kings be handling this as an organization? I mean, you made the point, and it's a valid point, and I don't want to keep harping on it, but it's a contractual obligation. This isn't just media's feelings being hurt because De'Aaron doesn't say hi. It's part of being a professional. Why wasn't this addressed, 13 or 14 games ago?
Yeah, and I think that, again, it's kind of a complicated situation a bit at times, and there's definitely layers to it. I'd say that, trying to think of the best way to put this, that, you know, there is De'Aaron is potentially kind of, I don't really want to speak for him, but he knows that that's a contractual obligation, and that if he wants to go against that for a bit and whatever ramifications that could potentially come with that, then that's also totally up to him as well. And something that he's allowed to do. And obviously, even if that means that maybe a little bit of money's taken out of his pocket, I have no clue if that happens or not. But obviously at a point where that's a little bit of a conversation. And I think honestly, a lot of it has to do with a good majority of this took place while they were on the road. You know, there was that game against New Orleans, and then they play again against Toronto maybe a day or two after at Golden One Center. And then they went on the road for a good five-game stretch there. So a little bit of a interesting perspective, at least from local Sacramento media perspective, of not, I think, being fully aware of the extent of him not really doing media until they just came back into town for these two most recent games.
Gotcha. Brendan Nunes with us, our Sacktown Sports Insider. And, of course, all guests are brought to you by the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Harrison Barnes, and I asked you this last night, kind of kiddingly, were the Kings showcasing Harrison Barnes last night, or was he showcasing himself? How would you answer that?
I'll go with they thought that after he had a good start and he was a little bit more aggressive, which, you know, maybe could point to him showcasing himself. You never really know.
Yeah.
That once he was going a little bit, they kind of kept feeding the hot hand. And I thought there were interesting comments post game a little bit about like Domantas Sabonis saying that he thinks Harrison Barnes actually has a mismatch on most nights, and that they benefit from him being a little bit more aggressive, and then they also being more aggressive in finding ways to get him involved. So I think that it's funny, you look at the start of the season where he scores 33 points, and then last night he drops 32, and in between, there's kind of just a bunch of there's more underwhelming performances than I think you would like. There's only one 20-point game, 20-plus, in between those 30-point performances, again, beginning of the year and then game 42 that we saw last night. And, yeah, I mean, with the deadline approaching and definitely the thought in the back of some people's minds, myself included, like, could this be the last time that he plays in Golden 1 Center as a member of the Kings? That it's a fair question, but honestly pretty difficult to answer. And I think that it's good for both sides to see him sort of have a game like that, considering the kind of slowed down production that we've seen from him for a majority of this year.
So what's your sense, Brendan? It's a 7-game roadie. It's a long road trip, and obviously a lot's going to happen around the league during that time. How different will this roster look the next time they play at Golden 1?
Yeah, definitely hard to gauge. I think that we've seen that this front office is definitely aggressive. I think that they are obviously going to be involved in a lot of conversations and are actively seeking ways to improve this team and have probably identified ways in areas that they think that there are potential paths to improvement. But I also very much believe that they should not act out of desperation and just make a move to make a move. That unless the locker room has any, like, have kind of lost their internal confidence, or unless there is like pressure from ownership, that Monty shouldn't feel like his back's against a wall, Monty and Wes Wilcox, because this team is all locked up for like pretty much 3+ years. You look at the large majority of it, you look at their starting five, they all have at least this year and two more remaining on their contract. I think Trey Lyles has this year and one more. So in your top seven, the only one you're missing is Malik Monk going into this offseason. And that'll be an interesting conversation for sure. But I think that because of that fact, that they don't need to necessarily be in a rush. And I know people probably won't love to hear that, because the season hasn't gone how many people would have hoped and expected. But it's a slow process, right? Like, Rome wasn't built overnight sort of thing. And that if I think that making no move is better than making the wrong move just because you felt like you needed to make one. So if I had to guess, I do think that they will look different and they will make a move, whether that's the first game back in Golden 1 Center on the 7th, or if it's on the 9th, the day after the deadline when they play Denver in Golden 1 Center. I think the team will look different, but if they don't, I guess kind of already come to at peace with that, because I don't think that they should be acting out of desperation. And if they don't, I don't think it'll be for a lack of trying.
Thank you, Brendan. We appreciate it. By the way, Brendan and I are the only people in the media room that put mayonnaise on our hot dogs at halftime.
Terrific.
Yeah.
It's an exciting moment for you guys.
It is. Yeah. Thanks, Brendan.
Yeah, we wear it proudly. appreciate you guys.
We'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
We're going to take time out here when we come back. We got Mr. Baseball here today. The one and only self-proclaimed Mr. Baseball.
Nobody calls me that.
He will share his thoughts on the brand new, just announced moments ago, Hall of Fame class when the Drive guys return on Sactown Sports.
Your afternoon home for Kings Talk and so much more. The Drive guys on Sactown Sports.
Yeah, I know we got the NFC Championship game coming up. And I know we got Kings about to embark on a 7-game road trip. And they've been up, they've been down, the roller coaster ride continues. But we have Mr. Baseball here. And we're not going to take up your whole afternoon with baseball talk. But we do have, it used to mean something, Mark Ryder, did it not? When the Hall of Fame class of the year was announced. And it was just announced moments ago, this year's Baseball Hall of Fame class.
And how great of them to drop it in on a Tuesday late afternoon.
Brilliant!
In the week leading up to the NFC AFC Championship
games. Do you remember when they did the Platinum Glove this year and they gave it to Fernando Tatis and it dropped at like 9 p.m. West Coast time
really?
On a Friday?
I didn't even know
that. I couldn't believe it. I was like, why is this news coming out at midnight East Coast time?
Why don't they just do it between quarters of the NFC Championship game? Right?
Well, listen, and truly, and if you decide, look, we need off-season material. We need, and you know, God knows MLB Network would say, we need programming. But at the very least, just boot it back 1 week to Super Bowl dead week, right? There's 2 weeks coming up before the Super Bowl. Next week's dead week. Just drop it right in there. You'll probably have the day mostly to yourself.
That's a simple one. You're so right. And I know the vast majority of people are like, I don't care one way or the other. But for those who do, if you just, let's just wait till nothing's going on,
yeah,
and maybe we'll get more notice.
The irony is that
it's
the lead
that complicated.
Up, the lead up to the Hall of Fame vote is a little bit bigger deal than it used to be because of people like Ryan Thibodeau, our old friend from the Bay Area, not Mr. Tibbs, who tabulates the pre-Hall release votes to the greatest extent he can, and it's usually kind of like exit polling. You get whatever you get. But even that stokes more interest in what's going on at the Hall of Fame, and then you just kind of drop it in on Tuesday. Yeah, we're kind of heading into evening on the East Coast. Let's just drop it in now.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
I was a little bit confused this year because my marker for when the Hall of Fame vote is when you see the "Should Barry Bonds be in the Hall of Fame" segment on ESPN.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
He's no longer eligible for the Hall of Fame. So it kind of crept up on me. It's like, well, now we don't have the "Should Bonds and McGuire be in the Hall of Fame" argument again.
Yeah,
that's true. And then, you know, I did see a spate of Gary Sheffield stories. So I guess we have a new narrative. But
I got to tell you, one of my proudest moments as a baseball fan is the time, in my own mind anyway, I don't know that this actually happened, but I convinced Mark Kreidler, a Hall of Fame voter, to vote for Burt Blyleven. In the previous year, he hadn't, and I tried to get him to vote for Burt Blyleven, and he did, and he might have done that anyway, but in my mind, I got Burt Blyleven into the Hall of Fame.
Well, I think you did.
Congratulations, Whitey. That's cool.
Actually, it's good insight because The voters, first, I started to say the writers, but the voters are all writers. It's not a broadcast. It's a weird vote. It's only writers. It's a very strange deal. But writers can and do change their minds.
Yeah. Year to year, sure.
Year to year.
That's why the numbers fluctuate.
And they fluctuate sometimes really weirdly, but sometimes it's as simple as a writer saying, I think I was just wrong. And that was my when I finally came around on Blyleven, it was just straight up, I think I've just been wrong. But yeah, you pounding your fist on the table didn't hurt. I think I came around kind of late on Tim Raines. He was another guy that I wasn't sure about.
What about Jim Thome? You love Jim Thome.
Jim Thome, big country boy. Yeah, he's just country strong. Not an issue, no question. So this year, Adrian Beltre was at 95% of the vote.
So we got three going in now, right?
Three after a couple of years in which one or none went in. Yeah. So I wouldn't say the floodgates opened, but Joe Mauer went in on his first ballot, which is difficult to do.
Played Mauer.
Indeed. And Todd Helton, who was a favorite to get elected this time around, I can't remember what year it is for him on the ballot, did go in. Billy Wagner, who a lot of people thought this might be his year as a closer, with closers having been elected more recently, Rivera and Lee Smith and Trevor Hoffman. He came up just short, five votes short, I think Kyle said. So
yeah, and this was year six for Helton.
Yeah, oh, thank you. And so you know, Wagner probably just comes right back around and picks up the five votes. Again, it isn't always that writers get beaten down, although there is a reason why not every writer makes his ballot public before the votes. It's because they don't want to go on social media and get trashed.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that writers, the voters come around on players. They change their minds on players. Some writers will tell you the ballot was too full for a number of years in a row. So some guys I might've voted for, I had to just put off to later years. That could be part of the game that Wagner has seen, and he'll probably be elected next year.
Won't Bonds get in eventually one way or the other? Well,
there's only one way now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They used to call it the Veterans Committee. I don't know if they call it that anymore.
I think they call it the Players Committee now, or the Modern Day Committee.
It's a committee set up so that in the case that a deserving player doesn't get in, that's like the last safety net, right?
Very effective. More players.
In theory, anyway.
More players, but also front office people. Have come to the Hall of Fame that way than through the
they let anybody
writers
in.
Vote. Writers won't let anybody in. And so this side door has proved to be, you know, pretty well used. On Bonds and on Roger Clemens both, I honestly don't know because that particular committee includes living Hall of Famers. It isn't dominated by them, but they comprise a fair number of that committee. And honestly, Whitey, they've basically said no chance on Bonds.
Hmm.
So they hold Bonds's records against him
mm-hmm.
in many cases because of the history associated. So, you know, sort of blatant cheating will get you booted, and vague cheating may get you elected.
Vague cheating, it's up in the air. If you're Pudge Rodriguez, but if you're someone else, then no, sorry, you're not going to get
in. Bonds' case is notorious, and that's just how it is. And McGuire's case was notorious.
And Alex Rodriguez, I think, was at 13% this year or 30%.
That's where it's going to be. He's not going in on the writer's vote, and he may not. And as we're starting to learn, that side door that's been open to a number of players through the decades may not be open to these guys, because some of the people who sit on the committee are existing Hall of Famers who would resent having a player elected who is clearly, unquestionably cheated, as opposed to guys where you say, "But I don't know."
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Years and years and years ago, when we were all growing up, you know, it was simpler, and there were magic numbers that guys would reach, and there would be 300 game winners, and guys that would hit 600 home runs, and you know, some of those so-called magic numbers, 3,000 hits, were automatic. It automatically qualified a player to get in. And now it's the way the game is played. It's just harder for players to achieve those things.
It
because
is.
They're not as emphasized. Like, 300-game winner, no one's going to win 300 games again.
God, right? No. I mean, 200's putting it way out there.
Yeah.
But the thing that's been interesting about the last several years is that partly because of that, because the game has changed, this, you know, the idea of using analytics, that is to say a different set of numbers, to evaluate players has become much more accepted, partly because of, right, let's assume he's not going to get the counting stats that we think should be associated with Hall of Fame. Can the argument be made that during, you know, the prime years of his career, he was as good as XYZ many Hall of Famers that are already in? That becomes a great argument. What I think is interesting about it is it a lot of times it takes the player out of the question and substitutes the numbers for the player. And that may be good for some voters. For other voters, it will be difficult because they'd like to say, I know a Hall of Famer. I saw a Hall of Famer play. I know what a Hall of Famer looks like. And that what and he wasn't it.
Right, right.
And that's a so emotionally, that's a really tough thing. And I'm
your son, yeah. Ryan, does he even concern himself with batting average anymore, which used to be like, what'd you hit? And I mean, I know it's still something, but does he look at on-base percentage? Do his coaches, like, how much does batting average even matter anymore?
Well, I can safely tell you that Ryan and every player in professional baseball still cares what his batting average is, because it's actually still a useful number. It isn't the necessarily preferred number.
They also show it every time you come up to bat.
Every single time. And if you're ever below the Mendoza line, that's when you realize how big the scoreboards are in Major League Baseball. So, yeah, batting average, yes. Home runs, yes. RBI, which, you know, sort of become the trash cousin stat of baseball. Yes, they care about all of it, because all of that contributes to most of the other numbers you're compiling. What happens is that a team can come to you and say, man, your exit velocity is tremendous. You just don't contact the ball often enough. It's like, okay, so you mean my batting average sucks. Thank you. Now we're coming back around. So, yeah, there's no question that you can understand you can understand the point of analytics, and you can embrace it. And I think the real challenge to coaching staffs, not just at the major league level, but below, is to figure out how do we take all this information and then take some of it to the player? Because you cannot bombard the player with everything you're learning. There's no way they could go up to the plate with that much knowledge and even swing a bat.
Mm-hmm.
So a big part of that skill is, how do we take all of this and distill it into one or two things that a player could actually use?
So as we go to break here, the three new Hall of Famers, and I want you to give us thumbs up or thumb down on each of them, cries. Adrian Beltre?
Automatic.
Joe Mauer?
Yeah.
Todd Helton?
Yeah, he's in.
All right, there you go.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Mauer was the only iffy in that just because, well, he had a huge position switch in the middle of his career when he couldn't catch anymore. And it changed a lot about how he was pursued. He was a Gold Glove catcher who had to spend the second half of his career as a first baseman DH.
If Helton hadn't played in Colorado, he'd be like a .257 hitter with 11 homers.
Always splits. Don't say that at all. Stop that.
Hall of Fame. Okay. Fine. The three best things about last night's King's victory, pardon me, are next here with the Drive Guys. Kreidler in for Draper today. Sacktown Sports.